Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome you today to On Point. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in the IDS in downtown Minneapolis. And in Studio Bravo, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, we have a lot going on here, I think.
yes, we do, Don. And it's a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. Temperatures in looks like the low 50s or whatever, a lot of sun out and et cetera, but this has been a turbulent week, and yesterday was just a turbulent day in the city of Minneapolis for our domestic and international audiences. You know, Don, we had three homicides at three separate locations within a period of about 30 minutes or thereabouts. Two in South Minneapolis, if you will, one in North Minneapolis, another homicide in North Minneapolis, but we had two south. And now media is intensified like bloodhounds trying to determine what's the correct stories about all of this, if you will, Don. We had a young African-American shot and killed by police after what was allegedly initially told was a fierce gun battle in a basement in South Minneapolis along the, 2700 block of
Bryant. Yes.
And then we had a motorcyclist, a young Latino, was hit by a Minneapolis police car, which was rushing somewhere. We're not quite clear now where it was rushing. And then we had a young African-American shot and killed by his own uncle, along Girard in North Minneapolis, if you will. And so this has been a very turbulent time. In fact, Don, on the homicide in North Minneapolis, there weren't even enough police because they were all at the crime scenes out south or at HCMC, Hennepin County Medical Center. And they had to call in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department and even brought in police from St. Paul. Did you know that? Did you know we actually, as a part of our reciprocal agreement here, and we had police from St. Paul in Minneapolis, helping out. So.
Wow, incredible. Incredible,
yeah.
Mr. Harris.
Just a terrible. By the way, we just want to send our condolences to the family of Ivan Romero, the young Latino Hispanic killed by a Minneapolis Police Department vehicle yesterday. Run over, if you will, and to the young lady. In fact, I'm going to spell her name, Josie. Her last name is spelled T-O-R-R-E-J-O-N. It appears the spelling of the young lady's name. She's in critical condition at HCMC, if you will. On the homicide in North Minneapolis, we're not sure that all next of kin have been identified, so we'll just indicate, unfortunately, young man loses his life, shot by his uncle. Police saying that it was a domestic, whatever that's supposed to mean, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, young Mr. Franklin shot and killed in the basement of a home there in South Minneapolis. And so we want to concentrate and start with the death of Mr. Franklin in the sequential order that it happened. Now, Don, I must say this in giving this quote-unquote sequential series of events and et cetera. It originally was being said, and I'm going to give a timeline here, Don.
Okay.
At around 3:30 to 4 or 5, people were being told by the media that it was a stolen car.
Yes.
That he had stole a PT Cruiser from somewhere in the vicinity of Calhoun, Lake Calhoun, but very popular lake here in Minneapolis on the south side, that he, I don't know if he was fleeing the police at the particular time, but for whatever reason, he hit a squad car They're on Lake Street, maybe up around the vicinity of Lindale and Aldridge on Lake Street. He, according to the initial versions, jumped out of the car, started running, ran into a bike shop there. And I assume that this bike shop was on Lindale.
Yeah, Lindale.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Then ran from that facility and was being chased on foot by
yes.
police. Yeah. And then ran into a house there, 2700 block on Bryant Avenue South. Initially, the reports were that he kicked out a basement window and crawled in, which would be kind of a tight fit, if you know what I mean. And then later that changed to he broke down the back door. Now, you have to understand, we were being told that a foot chase was in process.
At yes,
all,
we were.
You know. And he came into the home. In fact, the owner of that home is a producer or something for Minnesota Public Radio or somebody. He went to the basement. That's the cover story. Well, that's the story.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of special units that were apparently on site. One of them was the highly trained, skilled, and decorated special entry warrant task force, if you will. These are the guys that go in and serve warrants on you and go after dangerous fugitives, right? And they came in, they had a canine with them, which is interesting. Now, initially, we were all told that two police officers had been shot by the young man now identified as Mr. Franklin, right?
Right.
In a blazing gun battle at close quarters, Don, very, very close quarters, okay? Only problem was a couple witnesses saw him just, let's say, minutes before the shooting as well as the bike shop owner, and no one put a gun in his hand, okay? So I knew that, you know, it's going to be necessary to get a gun, you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So what happened is that the story now is the following. After being cornered in the basement, in the laundry room in the basement, a special entry team of five Minneapolis police officers entered the dwelling, sent the dog down the steps into the basement where there was a fierce hand-to-paw confrontation involving the German Shepherd and Mr. Franklin, which in itself, you know, has to be extremely intense. The officers came down the stairs, all five of them. You know, they're trying to say it was just two, but, you know, my sources tell me there were five. Now, they were all carrying submachine guns, so the MP5s or whatever they're called there, you know, semi-automatic weapons, full automatic. Fierce battle was being fought down in the basement, and then the story is going to be, this is the story that they're working on right now. When I say story, I'm talking about the police department and their attorneys, the city attorney, et cetera, that young Mr. Franklin was able to wrestle with the dog still on him and five officers surrounding. He was able to wrestle the automatic weapon, the MP5, from one of the officers and then open fire, shooting that officer and another officer, I assume, because two officers were shot, shot them both in the legs, you know what I mean? Like one got shot in the thigh, the other one, not, you know, lower leg.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he was killed, okay? Mr. Franklin was shot dead, right?
Yes.
It'll be interesting to know how many times he was shot, and it'll be interesting to see if Dr. Baker, the chief medical examiner for Hennepin County, who is legendary with respect to helping out the Minneapolis Police Department, making sure that you have the right kind of forensic evidence to support the police's contention, right?
Yeah.
And we well remember Dr. Baker and et cetera in the case of Quincy Smith, the young African-American tasered to death by the police in the middle of the street a couple years ago, a case which was unfortunately bungled by the attorney of record. In fact, this attorney bungled two cases. He bungled the Smith case, and he bungled the case of the young man shot and killed, a young man who was a hostage, you remember, over there in St. Paul?
Yes, yes.
Who was shot and killed at the Red Roof Inn as he broke away from the gunman that was holding him, shot and killed. Anyways, so the story will be that Mr. Franklin, fighting fiercely and with superhuman strength, actually disarmed one of the police officers in this hand-to-hand combat. Right?
Yes.
And by the way, we just want to indicate that the last 30 minutes of this program will be going for 90 minutes this afternoon, Mr. Allen, correct?
Correct,
the last
sir.
30 minutes we're going to set aside for telephone calls for anyone that wants to question us or examine us on what we're laying out to you. Now, so Mr. Franklin is shot and killed. And so at this point, trying to kind of get the story together. Now, the family, including his father, Walter Franklin, arrived at the scene. And the father did something I thought it was very interesting and appropriate, though your request is never going to be honored. The father asked to be able to see his son's body, and he kept asking the question why and what happened and et cetera. Of course, his request to view the body was denied, and in fact, they will not be allowed to see the body until after Dr. Baker gets through spinning his magic, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction is that the fatal shot was to the head. you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Of Mr. Franklin, a head shot, okay? How many other times he was shot? You know, only God knows. Now, at some point, a number of blocks away, about, I don't know, 10, 11 blocks away, on 26th and Blaisdell here in South Minneapolis, a young Latino, Mr. Romero, and the young lady that we've identified were riding on the bike. Now, witnesses maintain that Mr. Romero had the green light, even though our police cars here have a device which they can change the light from green to red, red to green, etc. A SUV, police vehicle, moving at an extremely high rate of speed, zooms through the intersection and, of course, hits the motorcycle, killing Mr. Romero instantly. His body laid in the street for hours, if you will, and sending the young lady to the hospital in critical condition. Now, here's the problem with that scenario, that particular piece. Sometime before the SUV police vehicle hit Mr. Romero, killing him instantly, the code 3 had been called off, and you had gone to a code 4, which meant that you stand down. In fact, a lieutenant who is in charge of those kinds of operations when you have an Operation 100, like is what you had there yesterday, leading up to the death of Mr. Franklin, you're supposed to then stand down, turn off your lights, reduce your speed, and et cetera. Right, Mr. Allen? Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And when Lieutenant Jack Kelly called that out in his transmissions, apparently the officer driving the SUV did not see fit to do any of that and continued to activate a code that had been disengaged. In other words, everyone was told to stand down. Okay, so it's going to be interesting how the attorneys for the city work that angle, okay, because already they are looking at Mr. Romero and the young lady's immigration status. Oops, you know. There will be some question if he had a license to operate a vehicle on the highways and byways of Minnesota. That's going to be interesting. If he doesn't have a license, then that will reduce the culpability and damages, if you will. And, of course, if he's not legal, that's really going to allow the city to kind of get off the hook, if you know what I mean. It'll kind of be like the situation with Mr. Booker, where federal authorities, ICE, will show up and indicate that if you don't stand down, that you'll be on the next airplane back to Mexico. Okay? So they're working on these kinds of things right now to try to put protection on the city, and because they've got a couple of operations going on right now they need to disguise. Now, also, I'm still puzzled by the need for so many officers to congregate at HCMC, where there were at least 35, 40, 50 officers, and then you had another 35 or 40 or 50 at the two scenes on Bryant and on Blaisdell, right? So you had close to 100 officers at the three scenes, right?
Yes.
And so when the homicide of a young African-American took place in North Minneapolis on Girard, apparently a 911 call was made, but there weren't any police to take the call, and the sheriff's department hadn't put all of their forces or personnel into play, okay? Because we even had St. Paul police here in Minneapolis directing traffic and helping out, particularly on the eastern side of our city, which borders the western side of St. Paul. We're you know, it's kind of like you do with the fire department, where, you know, the fire units come over from the other city and man your stations and et cetera. So we were having that kind of activity yesterday. So as a gunman busted into the house and slayed the young man in front of five young children, there was a call for assistance, but, God, we didn't have any policing, Don. We didn't have any personnel, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Up on that north side, okay, until the sheriff's department could redeploy its personnel. And, by the way, that brought in the legendary Pat King, the man who is legendary for destroying the Black Police Officers Association. He was very much involved, along with his friend and associate, Lieutenant Andy Smith, who now are both employed by the sheriff's department there. And so when the name of the suspect was revealed, they began a very high-profile stop search and, you know, whip Negroes on the north side. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of chaos there. Finally, the suspect surrendered or is in custody, okay? So we have those three events. Technically, those are three homicides, okay? But right now, you know, Dr. Baker really has got his work cut out for him in the case of Mr. Franklin, because he's got to develop the forensic evidence to make what the police are reporting plausible and legal, right?
Right, absolutely right, Mr. Herbert.
Yeah.
And you've made some very important points. And while you were talking, I sat here and made a list of 15 different points that will circumvent anything the police is saying. And I would like you to kind of critique a couple of these, Mr. Edwards, and I would like
to get
information too. Now, number one, the police said that this particular person, Mr. Franklin, had stolen the car, and then they also changed their tune or their song to say that he was a burglary suspect, and they attempted that gave them probable cause, saying he was suspicious. Am I correct?
That's correct. In fact, I mean, so we're clear, so that folks, particularly our domestic and international audience, understand that we are steeped and astute in law, that he was already, well, if you're black in this city, you're a suspect at all times. I mean, so it doesn't make a difference. You're always a suspect.
Okay.
The logic and rationale that's being developed now is that a week prior, Mr. Franklin was identified by, you know, people in that area out back all the way back out to Calhoun as a suspicious person, that he was a suspicious African American. And so apparently a week later, he was remembered to the extent that I don't know if the same group of people, maybe it's a crime watch, neighborhood watch or something like that, saw him. I'm not sure where we're going to place him. I don't know if we're going to place him way over there by Calhoun, which is about, you know, 15 blocks from where he died, or if we're going to put him two or three blocks away from where he died. I'm not quite sure, okay? But we had the alleged theft of the PT Cruiser, okay? Now, he did ram a squad car, I think it was squad 520, which would be consistent with a squad car assigned to the 5th Precinct, because that's where this happened, in the 5th Precinct in South Minneapolis, and that he rammed a squad car and then fled. So I'm not sure at what point he was being pursued as the theft of an automobile or a suspicious Negro in a white neighborhood. I'm not quite sure, Mr. Allen, to your specific question.
And then your second point, you know, myself being a former military and being trained, we're always trained. I'm pretty sure that Ms. Lisa Delgado can verify this, being a police officer where she is too, that if the weapon is strapped to your person and is not in use, the safety is on at all times, which means that the young man to grab the gun must have been cognitive or trained in military-style combat to flick off the safety with his thumb before he fired at the officers.
Well, let me say on that particular point, Mr. Allen, because I have in my role as a monitor for the Department of Justice for 5 years of this department, the PCRC, I would respond as a training officer by saying that because we had a potential felony suspect in a basement in a closed area, if you will, that we had already unlocked our safeties on our machine guns, and the safety was already off, if you will, because we were. See, you got to remember, at one point in time, there was traffic, what we call electronic traffic or chatter, which said that there was a gun battle going on as they were running on foot. See, it was very sensationalized by some of our media here in the Twin Cities that you had a actual running gun battle, except you had a woman by the name of Miss Thompson who showed up on both Channel 4 and Channel 5 here who was talking in terms of the young man running through her backyard and running within 2-3 feet of her, and she made the mistake, as far as, you know, investigators are concerned, of saying that she saw no weapon. Also, the bike store owner or bike shop owner who saw him maybe 3 minutes to 4 minutes before Miss Thompson saw him had also said the only thing he saw in the young African American's hand, now deceased, was a cell phone. And, you know, we just already have a situation where we have an African American who is going to the federal penitentiary for 10 years because the police changed a cell phone on the floor to a gun under sworn testimony. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, to your specific question on the securing of your weapon, if you will, I would say, and would advise my personnel to indicate that because there was a felony suspect in the basement, that we had taken the safeties off of our machine guns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so we, because of the confusion and pitch battle going on between the German Shepherd dog and the deceased, that we just didn't secure the weapon, though that's allegedly a no-no, because, see, they're trying to indicate to you that there was just two officers, but I'm advised there were five, okay? There were five officers in that basement along with the canine and along with the deceased. Now, I do think there was another misrepresentation or misstep in this scenario, but Dr. Baker will he will make sure everything is worked out to the satisfaction and the libel protection of the city. The whole thing about that the African-American, Mr. Franklin, had tried to break into the home through the basement,
I think
as he was being attacked by the dog, that he was trying to get away and he was trying to go out the window.
Mm.
Okay? Because you remember I told you they had to change that to the fact that he broke down the back door.
Yes.
Okay? I think that there'll never be a grand jury called either by the county attorney or by the U.S. attorney because they have to protect the department in this kind of situation. But let's say that you would call a grand jury and you would do a reenactment of the crime scene. I think you're going to find out that maybe some of the glass in his hand and et cetera came from both the back door, but also came as he desperately, and I think that young Mr. Franklin knew that he was going to die based on the things that were being said to him as the dog was attacking him and as he was being beaten and then, you know, just before he was executed.
Well, Mr. Edwards, that would make a lot more sense if he was in the basement, he kicked in the back door, and then they put the dogs on him, and he was trying to get out a basement window, and then the officers went down and et cetera from there. Not that he tried to break in a window, because that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, Mr. Allen. Also, by the way, so that our listeners are clear, he had no familiarity, according to the preliminary investigation, he had no familiarity with that home. So he didn't know anybody there. See, one of the things I'm going to suggest to anyone that knows the Franklin family and can reach out to them, number one, the bike shop owner initially, he later was encouraged to change his statement. Oops. He initially said that Mr. Franklin was on his cell phone talking to someone and was very terrified about what was happening. I have reason to believe that he would have been on the phone to a member of his family, maybe even his father, Walter. And the reason is the family arrived at the scene pretty quick. When I say pretty quick, I'm talking about within 45 minutes to an hour. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be, you know, the feds are real good at this. We've heard a lot of this as it pertains to the bombings in Boston, the sabotage in West Texas, where now they're admitting that the fertilizer plant was blown up by terrorists. Need to find out just what that discussion was, if you will. I mean, what was he saying? What was he fearful of, if you will? And how did the story emerge that before his death and before he took a semi-machine gun from a trained, highly skilled officer who I think is probably a veteran of either the Afghan or Iraqi campaign. Oops. You know, how what was it that he was being pursued about? Now, was it the theft of the car? Was it that he was a suspicious African-American and that maybe he was observed by undercover officers breaking in the car? You understand? The car has a history. The suspicion, quote-unquote, of a suspicious African-American has a history. And definitely there has to be now a history of what happened in that basement in those final moments of the life of Mr. Franklin.
Yes.
But now I have to tell you, this is not the first time. This is a carbon copy, Mr. Allen. You and I talked about it in the production meeting. This is a carbon copy of an African-American who was killed in exactly the same manner by the St. Paul police a number of months ago. Same exact scenario. A entry team came in. They were trying to serve a warrant on the deceased for sexual assault, molestation, and et cetera. He allegedly fled to the basement. The canine was sent in. There was a fierce battle. The canine officer came down the stairs and shot the African-American. By the way, that canine officer is now dead, too. He died of a heart attack about 2 months later. He was pursuing somebody again. And dropped dead of a heart attack. So, you know, sometimes fate is, you know, well, what it is. So there's a story and a history there, okay? Just like there's a story and a history with respect to the now deceased Mr. Ivan Romero, okay? And
yes.
So these are things that are really testing the ability of the local constabulary, if you will, the gendarmes, if you will, on how they're going to match this up. Because we repeat again what we said. There was no reason, based on the command given by Lieutenant Jack Kelly over the airwaves, to stand down. That the Code 3 was no longer in play and cease and desist. And so, you know, the SUV police van should not have been traveling at any high rate of speed, should have broke off and et cetera, because everything had been secured. The suspect was dead. The two officers were being transported to HCMC in downtown Minneapolis. So there are some stories and histories here, but I repeat what we have already talked about in production meeting session. There will be no formal investigation. Now, here's what we would ask for in the old days, at a time when we had leadership here in our city from the African-American community. We would have already been at the office of the county attorney and the federal U.S. attorney asking for the appointment of a special prosecutor. Not investigator, but special prosecutor, right?
Exactly.
We have done that, but that's not going to happen because it doesn't work like that anymore. What they will probably do is get a couple of our black clergy who will talk in terms that we must have faith and we must be forgiving. And then they will begin the whispering campaign that young Mr. Franklin, you understand, unfortunately, was not doing the right thing, though none of them have a clue on what it was that led to, first of all, to him being pursued and then to him being shot. But I repeat again, I do believe that he was attempting to flee that basement because he knew he was about to die. Didn't have anything to do with him grabbing, and as you pointed out to the Miss Delgado, that both you and I know, who is a police officer, active duty, that clearly when a 100-pound German Shepherd is on you and is biting at your testicles. See, we have a reputation in this town, again, for those that were listening, about 6-7 years ago, we had a young man in a similar kind of situation, had been identified as being suspicious. Police began to chase him. He ran up on a porch. Police dog was unleashed on him and tore his testicles out. Do you remember that, Mr. Allen?
I do. Yes, I do.
Tore his testicles out. In fact, at one point, the dog, while a lieutenant of the Minneapolis Park Police, stood on the porch laughing as the young brother, who is still alive now, lives in another city, you know, thank God, as his testicles were being played with on the porch by the dog.
Mm.
Yeah. So we have a history here, and as a federal overseer for the Department of Justice for a period of time from 2004 to 2008, we had some serious and almost violent discussions within the PCRC, that's Police Community Relations Council, about in this town, one of the things that they do is put you in the back of the squad car with the dog. Did you know that, Mr. Allen?
Oh, yes. I've heard that many times.
Yes, yes. Yeah, ain't nothing like putting you back there with Raul, okay, with Roba, because that dog will tear you apart, and there have been a number of situations in which it had been documented. We documented it for the Department of Justice, and it is on file. So we in the black community understand the aggressive and violent nature of the police dog, okay? And so you have to imagine that given the police dog biting and ripping at this young man and the police officers beating him, calling him racial epithets and et cetera. And then obviously a decision was made to execute him. I mean,
yeah.
I hate to say it like that, but that's clearly what happens, you know. I mean, you know, because we've kind of developed that kind of culture here in our country with respect to brown people and black people and et cetera. And so I just imagine the thinking was, hell, we don't want to be giving any depositions or going through any unnecessary kinds of inquiries. So this is, you know, blow his brains out kind of thing. So go ahead, Mr.
No, I was just, as we move into community
what
response.
What other points do you have? There's some any other points you feel like we need to answer here from Bravo Studio?
Well, in Bravo, from Alpha Studio here, I'm just saying that, you know, you just mentioned the big piece there about the in the old day, how people used to get together and request certain investigations and items of that nature to address these kind of issues. And I haven't seen very much, Mr. Edwards, of the group Mad Dads out there, besides what you said, Mad Dads.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know, their leadership has a contract with the city. In fact, I would assume that our good friend has already met with the Franklin family as well as the family of the deceased homicide victim in North Minneapolis, and I assume is counseling them, I would assume.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, all the points that you brought out, the 15 points that you brought out, raises huge questions about the process of what happened to this incident. And also another thing, Mr. Edwards, a point I wanted to make was the coverage by the mainstream media, again, who suggested that this was a fierce gun battle, as you said, many times during this conversation. And so, I mean, where do we get the right information and when, I guess, would be my question.
I think you're absolutely correct. Basically, how it will be done, they will call on the county attorney, Mike Freeman, if you will, to allegedly take a look at it. But like I said earlier in this program, Mike will do everything he can to make sure that it does not go to a grand jury. But if it does go to a grand jury, then it will go to the traditional all-white grand jury, which is a hallmark, a legacy in this county. But right now, they will resist and indicate that an internal investigation and reflection of the events surrounding the deceased in the shooting at the house, in the death of Mr. Romero, that these are matters that can be handled through internal examinations and investigations.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. And we just want to remind our callers at the last half hour of this program from 4 to 4:30, we will open the phone lines because we have other important information, though this is probably the most important. As we said at the top of the program, Mr. Allen, three separate homicides in Minneapolis under three different circumstances, but two of them definitely involving the Minneapolis Police Department, and the third reflecting a situation in which there wasn't really good community policing, because we would like to hear the 911 call that was made by people who knew that a loved one was about to be killed in the house there in North Minneapolis. And, you know, why was there not a contingency plan to have Sheriff St. Paul Police, whoever was going to be brought in? In fact, that area was close enough that they could have come in from Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Robbinsdale. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Yes.
I know the area.
Yes.
But there wasn't anybody there when the call was made for help, if you will, in the murder and or homicide there on Girard, if you will. So this is the situation as we look at it now. A lot of meetings going on, Mr. Allen, a lot of discussions, trying to get everything in place. See, at some point there will have to be a reenactment, if you will, of what happened in the basement. And it will be fascinating to see how the young victim, if you will, was able to, with the dog on him, with other officers on him, how he was able to wrestle that MP5, you know, away from a well-trained, well-conditioned police officer. I just can't imagine how that could have been done.
No,
and you raised an excellent question as a former military man about the safety being on the weapon. But I think from my experience and watching the training and being familiar with our special elite units here, I think I got the answer for you. You know, it was in the middle and in the midst of the drama. And this, in fact, one of the statements that's been made about Mr. Franklin as we speak is that he seemed to be on something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's normally a prelude to indicate that he was smoking something, injected something, and so he had superhuman strength.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not
and
good.
He seemed to be crazed, if you will.
Well, yes. That's what they say about most of us. We're all crazed in one shape or another.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like animals. We're like animals, if you will. Yeah. Okay, what else? Let's move along. As we said before, at 4 o'clock, we'll open the phone lines, and anyone that has any questions, we'll probably get a lot of people who say that they didn't turn into the program early on or they didn't hear what we talked about at the beginning. We'll see, Mr. Allen, but go ahead. What else we got?
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, a continuation on from our last week's show when we were questioning the Minneapolis Public Schools and the information for CSI, Community Standards Initiatives, Minneapolis, on the reports that were supposedly submitted to the school district. And we had one Mr. Al Flowers on the air with us last week who contended there were reports and that the organization did submit the reports to the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I have a email which I have posted and asking for the reports. And the response I got back was from the communications and public affairs specialist who says, we have asked for them but have yet to receive them. And that was on Thursday, May 9th at 5:28 p.m. Her deadline was to get back to me before 3. And I know she tried her best, and that's why I'm not announcing her name, because she has been at least working with us to try to unlock this particular set of circumstances to find out why the Minneapolis Public Schools and why the fiscal agent, New Bethel, the fiscal agent for CSI, has not seemed to provide any documentation on successes
Well, Mr. Allen, for transparency, I'm a little confused because we went back and reviewed the conversation, on-air conversation with the gentleman. He clearly said not only had the reports been filed, but that you could ask him personally and he would provide you a report. Now, did we do that? Did we follow up by asking him directly?
I asked him directly for the reports, Mr. Edwards, and I was told that by him that I could get them, and then I was told that there are not really any reports, and so I asked, where can I find it? Were they never done? And I was just kind of sidestepped and marginalized and brought down to the point where there are no reports at all.
Oh,
and
I
came to that conclusion based on my my email from a person that represents the Minneapolis Public Schools who under her authorization, sent me the information that says we have asked for them but are yet to receive them. But so that was her exact quote. And that's posted on Facebook under the radio show page On Point. If anybody would like to go see that, it's in right there in living color right now. So
let me take the opportunity also, because there had been a lot of discussion, a lot of chatter, as we call it, on the websites, personal pages, and et cetera. Ms. Soledad O'Brien of CNN, or formerly of CNN, but still, I guess, finalizing her program series, Black in America, she continued to spend a significant amount of time in our beloved city. She was at South High School in the mid part of the week, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
And she came into the school after regular classes, so she really wasn't looking to interview any African-American students, and no African-American parents were made aware. But she interviewed for some specific period of time a Caucasian history teacher at South High School who claims himself to be an expert on the education of the Negro. And so that was interesting, because I've been trying to figure out at what point she has sat down with black parents who have children in the Minneapolis public schools. I mean, I know she's sat down with the superintendent and other people and members of the school board and et cetera. I think she had to meet with our most senior black state senator. I think she was forced to do that. But at some point it's important for those parents. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, our congressional representative, Keith Ellison, still has a child, a daughter, at South High School. And her mother, of course, is a member of the Minneapolis Board of Education.
Yes.
And I just wondered if Soledad O'Brien reached out to Representative Ellison and his lovely wife to interview their daughter, who would certainly represent she would represent the epitome of a successful black American family. Would you not think so?
I would agree with that 100%.
She would be in the upper 99.9 percentile of African Americans. I mean, her daddy, a United States representative, her mother, a respected educator, and a member of the policy board in which governs the school that the young lady goes to. I mean, what better example of success in black America?
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think that Soledad, and maybe some of those that have been in consultation and contact with her, could give her a heads up, or we will text to her, you know, our reflections on this particular program, because I just don't think she reached out to the young lady. Isn't that a missed opportunity, Don?
I think that's just add to the list of missed opportunities, because, you know, when she was in town the first time at the African American Leadership Forum, who had a meeting today at Shiloh International Ministries on Broadway, set up a series of different meetings and engagements to give the facade, or the look that I call it facade, but give the look that that this program that she was originally here to talk about, the Northside Achievement Zone and the U.S. Promise Neighborhood Grant, was doing wonderful things for our poor Negro community and poor community in the Northside Achievement Zone.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I had questioned Ms. O'Brien. I had sent emails to CNN, and I followed her on Twitter. She followed me on Twitter, and so I used that medium to communicate with her. And Mr. Edwards, lo and behold, I get an email from Twitter saying your account is temporarily suspended because, you know, you're bothering Soledad O'Brien and Superintendent Bernadier Johnson on Twitter.
I understand, Mr. Allen. I was told by representatives of mine on the West Coast that had happened to you. I was shocked when I heard it all the way from California that a intercept had been made. That you are you now under suspension or were you reinstated?
No, I was reinstated with the clause that I do not tag Superintendent of Minneapolis Public Schools, a public person, Bernadier Johnson, Superintendent Johnson, or a public person, CNN's reporter in Black in America, Soledad O'Brien. So,
oh, okay. So you were kind of admonished and sanctioned, kind of like the baseball umpire yesterday, given a 2-game suspension because he did not interpretate the rules. He's called a crew chief, Fisher, if I'm not mistaken. He was given a 2-day suspension. So you were given an admonishment because they didn't like the kind of questions you were raising to Ms. O'Brien and Ms. Bernadier, Superintendent Bernadier Johnson. Wow.
No, they did not. They did not like the questions. And there is a copywritten story in the Hamline University Oracle newspaper about the grade 13 and published, written by myself and published by them. So, I mean, if people in academia feel that strongly about it, to publish it in the number one private university in Minnesota or in the Midwest, people need to pay a close attention to what's going on with Northside Achievement Zone.
Well, yes, because now Northside Achievement Zone is a forerunner of the Peace Foundation. Is that correct?
Yes, it was the Peace Foundation, and then they received a $500,000 grant, the Peace Foundation did, from Northway Community Trust, from the $10 million endowment that was given by the Northwest area. Kevin Walker was there at the time. This is before Gary Cunningham was there.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Northway Community Trust is defunct. They're the folks who...
Oh, that's right. They went out of business and... Their exec director disappeared and later showed up in Chicago, didn't he?
Yeah, and then so, but also, you know, this is the same organization that paid almost $60,000 for a survey on West Broadway to a group of people in Chicago that never came through with a report.
Well, that's what the tie-in between the exec director here, because it turned out that really was his home base of operation. He brought in a couple of his homies. And they just kind of made off with that money, didn't they? Oh, yeah, okay. All right, okay. Yeah. So, but we want to be sure because you will probably come under attack. So you were admonished, but you have not been suspended from your Twitter account.
No, I am still on Twitter doing my thing and pointing people to that direction. So, no, there's not very much, you know. I mean, Twitter is concerned when someone says they are being harassed or I'm abusing Twitter, and especially someone like Soledad O'Brien that could be covering up what she's actually doing here in the Twin Cities and does not want to answer any questions, that wants to be above reproach. So, they're gonna listen to her before they listen to little old me. And so,
well, I hope she publishes the interview that she did with the white history teacher there at South, who, as I said before, proclaims himself as having the answer to how to educate the little, intellectually downtrodden and ignorant Negro students there. I mean, you know, I hope she's gotten his reflections and perspective, if you will. But I said I was disappointed that she did not go to any great lengths to interview the daughter of our fifth congressional congressman here, Keith Ellison. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I would have, like I said, again, represents the 99.9% success in Black America. But this has been an interesting time in our city. Oh, by the way, just on a quick note, the Black Firefighters International is in our city. Boy, they've been partying back too, Don. They partied last night at Lexus and at Sevens, and they're at a big luncheon at the Hilton here today, and they're having a big party in bulk. But here's the thing that's troubling. We just completed a new eligibility list for the Minneapolis Fire Department.
Yes.
And, you know, prior to, well, you know, to the last couple of months, Minneapolis's fire department proportionally is the most diverse fire department in the United States. Won't be like that in 8 years. The list has been completed. 325 white applicants assigned to the list, 14 African Americans.
Wow.
And based on my long experience of dealing with this, again, as a overseer for the federal court, appointed directly by the federal court back in the 80s and 90s, based on how things are working here in the Twin Cities, you'll be lucky if one of the 14 African Americans are in the first 25.
Oh,
for
wow.
eligibility to be appointed a firefighter here in our city. And by the way, let me just say this on the Minneapolis Police Department, whose numbers are kind of stagnant right now as it pertains to African-American police officers. Yeah, the chief has a new policy that that the majority of African-Americans are not able to read or do not have good reading skills. In fact, we had three, and this is for the brothers over in the Somali community, we had three young candidates for the community service officer's position, which kind of gets you ready to become a sworn peace officer.
Yeah.
Three young Somali students at Edison High School. You know where
yes.
Edison's at, right?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were all disqualified because it was said that they did not have good reading skills.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, Don, you know what I mean? They're getting it done here in Minneapolis under R.T. Ryback and his appointees. These black folk are going to have no role whatsoever in city government. And, oh, by the way, let me just say this. A couple of caucuses, because, you know, we're in the middle of the mayor and councilman races, right?
Yes, we are.
Our good friend Don Samuels, your fellow countryman, if you will, made the following statement early this morning at a mayor's mayoral debate. He said that the study shows, I'd like him to identify that study for us. He said, studies show that people who get a high school education are less likely to be involved in criminal activity.
Wow. He said he just went out on a limb like that.
Yes, yeah. He said it this morning. There are any number of people, hundreds of people that can authenticate it. By the way, your good friend, the supermarket tycoon, William English, was at one of the gatherings this morning putting up posters for his good friend Jackie Cherry Holmes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Oh, no. We
yeah,
got her.
Yes, yes. I'm telling you, they're in full regalia. Yes, sir.
Yeah, we need to have a talk with, you know, sit old Billy down and get his mind right, because he's obviously falling off the deep end.
Well, how's the store going? Someone said, was there some kind of flooding or something? Because the store has been closed down for quite some time.
Yeah,
is there a problem over there?
Well, the store is closed, Mr. Edwards. It's closed.
There. It's closed?
It's
oh,
closed.
My, my, my.
And
wow.
there was a note on the door that says, due to sickness. And what kind of sickness that was has been undetermined at this point, but I'm sure
well,
he wasn't sick.
He wasn't sick this morning putting up posters and wearing a somebody said he was wearing a red Jackie T-shirt.
Mm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Jackie likes red. She has always liked the color red, I tell you. But anyways, yeah, he was wearing, yeah, I mean, well, maybe it wasn't him, but he's one of the four owners, right?
Yes, yes. He's one of the partners.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, let's get on with it and say because we're coming up on 5 minutes, and we'll, you know, certainly open those phone lines for the homicides in Minneapolis yesterday at three different locations, if you will. But what? Anything else that we have here, just as,
well,
you know.
Well, yes, we do, Mr. There's something very serious that we have to talk about, because, you know, there's been promises of jobs in the new Viking Stadium, the Henry County Hub Building Service Center, and a host of other startups. And the problem is most people who are talking or promoting this new rash of hiring have not done their homework, and they're nothing more than cheerleaders for the problem and seek to misrepresent unemployed and underemployed people in the Twin Cities. And so I received through Intercept a flyer for the anniversary of the North Minneapolis tornado titled Better Than Before, Rebuilding Our Community. According to this flyer from the logos, the sponsors are the Ackerberg Group, Knutson Construction, Minneapolis Urban League, North Point, KMOJ, Summit Academy, Turning Point, Urban Homeworks and Hope United. Now, on this poster, Mr. Edwards, we also have a picture of Senator Bobby Joe Champion and school board member Kim Ellison, who had no idea that she was on this poster. And this is very problematic because it's at UROC on the 22nd from 3:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., and they plan on giving updates on the proposed Workforce Center on West Broadway, the Hennepin County Hub, and I got to get
now,
back
to that. Now, wait a minute. Let me just step in for a minute. On West Broadway or on Plymouth?
Well, it says here, proposed Workforce Center on West Broadway.
Authors of that pamphlet didn't know that the game plan had changed. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and then the second point is the Hennepin County Hub. So I think they're talking about two different things, Mr. Edwards. Because, you know, the Workforce Center, which is now on Plymouth Avenue,
yeah.
They're talking about moving that somewhere, but I'm pretty sure it's not to move to West Broadway.
And well, now, see, they were talking about when Ackerberg was still in play and before Mortensen moved in with their special advisors, if you will, they were talking about putting the workforce and the hub in the same facility.
Yeah.
Which will be the building across the street from the current Workforce Center there on Plymouth Avenue North, right there at Fremont. Okay, but I think I understand what happened. Yeah, and so that folks don't get upset with us and call us and, you know, bless us out, it was in a copyrighted story by Rochelle Olson, if you will.
Yes.
In fact, a frequent caller to this program, Mr. Wesley Smith, is quoted in that article. And
yes, he is.
The plan is that the new workforce and hub will go on Plymouth Avenue, which was a defeat for mayoral candidate Jackie Cherryholmes because
yeah.
they had wanted it on Broadway, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, they wanted it up there by the school district. You know, they had a new hub of creation up there.
Well, initially, though, when Ackerberg came in with that recommendation, the Jordan neighborhood, led by a number of white citizens and the mayor's policy aide for police community relations, rallied the white community to say that they didn't want to see all the welfare Negroes up there.
Mm-hmm. They sure did. That's exactly
yeah,
what they did.
They ran Ackerberg up out of here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Though it appears that Ackerberg has now supplanted Mortensen is back in the ballgame. I tell you, you talk about musical chairs. Lord have mercy.
Yeah, the shell game continues. Now,
yes, sir.
Mr. Edwards, what's problematic with this flyer is that they have the update on the Hennepin County Hub. Hennepin mm-hmm. County is actually having a meeting that night to talk about the hub at another location. And so, the Hennepin County has slated three meetings. The first one is coming up Tuesday, May 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. At PICA, Head Start in North Minneapolis. Actually,
that's
all the
700 Humboldt Avenue North, correct?
Yes. And then
in the copyrighted story by Rochelle Olson in the Minneapolis Star Tribune about 4 days ago. Gotcha,
yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
And on Wednesday, May 22nd from 6 to 9 p.m., they're having another meeting at PICA, 700 Humboldt Avenue North, from 6 to 9, which conflicts with this cannibalistic cheerleading process that these folks are doing at UROC, actually, from 3:30 to 7 p.m. on the 22nd. And then one of the bullet points here is they're going to be talking about new Viking Stadium jobs for North Minneapolis residents. I had to almost choke, Mr. Edwards. And so what's so problematic about that is that these people don't understand that there are more than people in North Minneapolis who need jobs. And if you try to even push something like that through, you know, we need jobs for these people in North Minneapolis, that's against any federal regulation that's out there. You know, collectively, there has to be jobs for everybody. Yes, North Minneapolis, the people in North Minneapolis need jobs. But the state legislature have already written down some laws that invites the Minneapolis Urban League in to form some type of hiring conduit for those people in the city that might be qualified or not qualified.
Well, yes, it's right there in the legislation that the Urban League will have job fairs and et cetera, and working with a youth-oriented organization and an organization dealing with handicap, et cetera, will develop a plan of certainly notification and possible job development and training. Only problem is, if you look at the article in the paper yesterday that the state and the city of Minneapolis are now saying that, you know, and it had to do with, in fact, article in this morning's paper, Minneapolis Star Tribune, that the Vikings are going to have signed on allegedly for 2014 and 2015 because they will have to play in TCF, the flagship of the University of Minnesota. But the article goes on to say that there will be contingency plans to play in the stadium in the 2016-2017 season.
Mm. So yeah. they're having huge problems with that. Huge problems with that. So, yeah, it's just, you know, this overall event and then the cannibalization of different events in North Minneapolis. And, I mean, I took pictures of several houses in North Minneapolis, Mr. Edwards, that still have tarps on them, blue tarps, green tarps from 2011. And the neighborhoods where the trees are just gone. And so I don't know what these people will promote. I don't know what the dog and pony show will be, but I might just have to get a front row seat for this.
Absolutely, Mr. Allen. Absolutely. Wow. This is kind of unbelievable. Yeah. Because there's no plan for a significant inclusion of African Americans. That, unfortunately, that timeline has been missed.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. And Wanda Kirkpatrick and Met Council and Velma Corbell with the Met Transit are partly to responsible for that missed timeline. And
absolutely.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Well, Mr. Edwards, we're going on 401. We're going to open up the phone lines.
Okay.
Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Phone lines are wide open if you'd like to have any questions, comments, suggestions, or challenges. We'll take them all. And we have two people that have been holding for the entirety of the show, 1 hour and 1 minute. And I don't
know.
Wow.
Well, if they're holding to ask questions.
Let's find out. Let's find out.
Put them on. Sure.
You are live on the air, 297. Do you have a comment, or are you just listening in the queue? Hello? He will put you back.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air. Do you have any comments? Hello?
Yeah, I'm in the queue.
Okay.
Just in the queue. They're just okay. All right, then.
Just in the
okay.
queue.
All right.
That's great.
All right. We're opening the phone lines. Opportunity to deal with the events here in the city of Minneapolis yesterday. Three separate homicides under very questionable conditions. A young African-American shot and killed after allegedly shooting two police officers with one of their own guns, a MP5 submachine gun. Real questions now about the authenticity of the police version. Then a young motorcyclist, a young man by the name of Romero, hit and killed by a police vehicle allegedly going to the scene of the incident. The only problem is that a direction and order had been given that they were to stand down from the Code 3, and that meant that all vehicles were to cease and desist and stand down. So that's got some consequences. And then a young African-American shot and killed at a time when there was no Minneapolis police service in the northern part of the city of Minneapolis, which may have unfortunately led to his homicide and death. So these are things now being worked on by our leadership and lawyers and et cetera in this city, Mr. Allen.
So, Mr. Edwards, let me ask you a question, because bring up some of your knowledge here. In cases like these, especially the one where the police weren't available in a timely fashion, and I hear over north that they never are, for incidents that happen, where there's a homicide or a murder or a crime, what role would a functioning civil rights department play? And actually, in all these cases,
under my leadership back in the day, when we had statutory authority over the police to subpoena them and bring them in, as chairman of the commission, I would have already indicated our intention to make, first of all, we would have made inquiry before, you know, in any way being hostile or overly aggressive with the department. But we would have, I would have asked for a meeting with the chief on today, no later than Monday, to discuss where we go with this. I would certainly have reached out to the family of all three of the victims, the two African-Americans and the Latino.
Yes.
And if it was the determination of the commission under my stewardship and the director of the department, we would then begin to consider the possibility of public hearings. But we also then would have asked the federal U.S. attorney to ask the FBI to come in and investigate, particularly in the case of young Mr. Franklin. That's the way you take care of some business, Mr. Allen.
And yes, that's what I was kind of curious about, because I see no action at all whatsoever. And, you know, you're beating a dead horse when you talk about, you know, our local African-American or black, whatever you prefer, social services, advocacy, activist agencies that are tasked to pay attention to this. And, you know, all these groups that we have here, I know that Citizens United Against Police Brutality will eventually pick up the ball and run with it first. But, you know, she's one person just working with an ad hoc group.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would hope that someone like that would have the support of these agencies. And I know in most cases she does not. And so that is unfortunate in all respects. And so it's like we're stranded at a time in a position where, you know, we're asking questions. Who are the spokespersons? Who are the people that should help with the justice out there instead of showing up for camera opportunities or what they call that?
Photo ops, as we call it.
Photo ops.
Yes.
We want to get on the news and say, you know, record it and put it on Facebook. And, yeah, we was on the news. And, you know, you haven't really done much of crap. So that's kind of shocking in every sense. And so,
yes, it is. But I hope that I answered to the satisfaction of the listening audience and et cetera how it used to be done. Now, of course, the commission no longer has subpoena authority. That was taken away after the commission, and this is way back in 1972, but the department still has authority. And even if I were the chairman of a commission that didn't have subpoena powers, I would put pressure on the mayor and his appointee, the Civil Rights Department director, who's paid, you know, over $100,000 in taxpayers' money, that we would work out an approach to dealing with this. And we certainly would reach out to the family and to the affected communities, okay? We would meet with Latino, Hispanic leaders. We would meet with black leaders. We would meet with those who are of concern. But none of that is in place anymore, Mr. Allen. So that was the genesis for my comments at the top of the hour at 3 in indicating that nothing's going to happen. This is going to be suppressed, if you will. And I think that's one of the reasons we're not getting any calls.
Yes.
Because people don't know what side they're supposed to come down. You got to remember, this is an election. You got people out there supporting candidates who have done nothing to augment or enhance or support or to build up civil rights and the civil rights, not only the Civil Rights Department and commission. You don't even hear about the commission. People don't even know there is a commission. But because there has been no attention paid to civil rights of African Americans and others of color, notice what I said, color,
mm-hmm.
We have basically been thrown under the bus and sacrificed. And so we don't have any capabilities.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the whole scenario here and trying to figure out. And I'm actually getting some texts in, Mr. Edwards, and people
are getting some texts. Yeah.
They are concerned about this on many levels and many layers, and they're asking, what can we do? And we do have a caller.
All right, let's get the caller.
Stand by.
And I may have to switch phones, Mr. Allen, because I'm getting a big low battery here. But let me try to stay with it until I have to call back on our entry number. But let's get the caller in.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'll be very brief. I was listening to your program in the beginning, and I've called in before.
Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed, or not noticed, but I was listening to, and it was in regards or with respect to the two young African-American males who I believe were in the act of committing a crime or running away from a crime, and the Hispanic male, again, who was at the wrong place at the wrong time because he was hit by an officer who was given an order, as you stated. One of the things that, and I've mentioned this before, one of the things, and I have another comment, one of the things that bothers me is that there's no accountability for what these young men have done. So in a sense, what I'm hearing and what other people are hearing is that we're giving them an excuse, and it's, oh, the police shouldn't have done that. And if they wouldn't have put themselves in that position, and I'm not condoning if they did anything wrong. One thing I do understand, and I hope you understand, is I actually have a Schutzen dog. That means it's a German Shepherd who I talk to in German, which is a canine dog. They are taught and if you have a canine who is a sworn, they are sworn police officers, just like a man who walks on two legs. Mm-hmm. So if that officer goes downstairs and he sees you engaging that dog, he's going to do whatever he can. Exactly. So yeah. What I would just like to hear sometime, gentlemen, is, you know, there has to be some accountability. Yeah,
okay,
it may have went wrong.
Let me deal with that, sir, because if I'm not mistaken, I think that you are a caller that calls us from the West Coast. I think you call from a city that has its own problems with credibility between the community and the police, but we won't get into that, sir.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just
mm-hmm.
say, first of all, Mr. Franklin, the first unfortunate victim in the scenario of yesterday, we, mm-hmm. sir, really don't know what it was he was doing.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We really don't know if he was a burglar, if he was a car thief, or if he was a black man at the wrong place at the wrong time, as you said about our Hispanic brother. We really don't know at this hour, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what we do know is that the circumstances leading to his death were not consistent with what actually happened. In other words, that he fought with a dog and five well-trained police officers, disarmed one of the officers, and shot I assume it was that officer and another officer before
mm-hmm.
he was finally shot. That story has not been confirmed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In the
mm-hmm.
case of the Latino brother, you're absolutely right, sir. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
In
the case of the second African-American, he was killed as a part of a home invasion. He was in his home with his little five nephews and nieces when he was shot dead.
Okay.
The person
and I apologize
shot him broke
because
into
I...
his home. Sir,
I didn't hear the completion of that story.
I appreciate that, sir. We appreciate that.
Right.
And your point is well taken, because we know that in this country, as it was in the case just a year ago of Trayvon Martin, that
mm-hmm.
Negro lost his life because he must
yep.
have been doing wrong. Okay. Now, what we will do, sir, and we certainly encourage you and invite you to give us a call back, and we
mm-hmm.
you know, we have no problem with your examination of us. We will update when we find out if the authorities are prepared to authenticate the circumstances that led to the death of Mr. Franklin. Now, you may did not hear this. I think you heard it in the last couple minutes. In my day,
mm-hmm.
many years ago, we would have, as chairman of the Civil Rights Commission here in this city, I would have immediately called for a federal investigation and the appointment of a special federal prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
mm-hmm.
going to happen here, okay?
Right.
The leadership we have in this town is in no position to do anything, and we're in the midst of an election, and folks are running around trying to talk in terms of what, you know, white candidates.
Well, I did, yeah, and I did live in the city when you were, I mean, you know, I remember very well when you with the NAACP, there were some incidents with black firefighters, black police officers, so I remember all well when you were
in power.
Yeah, I was federal
overseer.
You were very upfront.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
My second point.
Go ahead, sir.
I happen to, you know, a lot of people know I'm from Minnesota, and I have a lot of connections from Minnesota. So one of a good friend of mine who is who's in law enforcement in Minneapolis, and we've known each other since I was probably in the fourth, fifth grade going to Maxfield Elementary in St. Paul.
Okay, I went to Max Field then in St. Paul.
I went to Max Field. Go ahead, though.
Really?
Yes, I did. Yes, third and fourth grade. Yeah.
So you know the Coolidges?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay, so that's all we'll say. So what I want to say is...
Oh, you guys know each other. Oh, okay.
So what I... A friend gave me a link to a video. I was so utterly disgusted, hurt. I don't know other words to describe it. But there was a pastor that was on the YouTube channel. And I heard him mention about black political, and to me, I can read between the lines. It almost sounded like he was talking about you. But he said, I mean, this is a pastor, and he's using words like ass, forgive my language, ass. And he said, he knows where I am. And for a pastor to say that about, to even engage in violence like that, and the way he was talking about the black leadership in the community, I think his name was McAfee, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but I think his name was McAfee. And if it is, if I'm wrong, I am so sorry about the name, but if I'm right, he needs to be kicked out of whatever church that he's governing or that he's a part of right now. So I saw that, and it just thoroughly just...
What was the title of the video? Do you remember?
Oh, boy. I would have to look it up again. But
because most of the videos that I've that Reverend McAfee are on YouTube, I have shot them.
Okay, now I'll tell you. This one, he was either in fatigues or he was had people behind him.
Yeah, and he had a hat on, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I filmed that in January 17, 2011 at the Council on Black Minnesota's event in St. Paul.
He should be stripped of any type of credential that he has for a pastor to talk like that. That is disgusting, and I hope his church members leave fast. That was utterly disgusting.
I apologize. This is Mr. Edwards. I'm back with you. We had electrical problem. I missed most of your comment, but
okay.
I assume that you're talking about the minister known as K.G. Wilson?
No, Mr. Edwards. He is referring to a video I taped of Reverend McAfee on January 17, 2011.
Well, I'll stand down because that was an attack on me. Yes.
See, I didn't know. I knew it. Our black leadership in St. Paul, Minneapolis is small, and I still keep a very close eye on what's going on. But as I was saying to Mr. Allen, mm-hmm. is that this man should be kicked out of whatever church that he's running. I think if his congregation, I mean, a pastor to be talking as vile as he was talking and saying that he knows where I am, come down here anytime. Really? My pastor is going to engage in violence with somebody who he has a disagreement over or with? That goes beyond. I'm just disgusted, and I hope he hears me. I hope his congregation hears me, and I would love to fly into Minneapolis and talk in front of anybody that we can just to show examples of how real pastors and how real leaders lead. They don't lead with violence to another black leader. It's disgusting. I hope he hears this, and I'm just disgusted. I'm viled, and it's I'm embarrassed that he's a part of the clergy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have to say, gentlemen. Thank you so much. I enjoy your program as usual, and have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, I probably.
Mr. Edwards. Okay. Mr. Edwards will be right back with us here. We are having a little bit of technical difficulty, and hopefully he will log in the studio over there. The engineer is actually working, but while we're waiting for Mr. Edwards to get hooked back up here, I just want to let you guys know, our listeners know, that there will be meetings on Tuesday, May 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. At Pica Head Start at 700 Humboldt Avenue North. There also will be meetings on Wednesday, May 15th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the same location, and Wednesday, May 22nd at 700 Humboldt Avenue North. So I would go to either one of those meetings. They have Spanish and Hmong interpreters there waiting for you to, if you should so desire them. And again, here I am looking through the glass, and hopefully Mr. Edwards is coming back. And yes, the engineer.
Technical mix-up was.
Yeah, the engineer has signaled that Mr. Edwards is back with us. Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Thank you.
Okay, well that caller, that was interesting. We'll have to talk off mic about, because I was saying something about also policing in the Twin Cities. But, yes, I kind of got a flavor. What else do we have, Mr. Allen, because do we have any other calls?
No, we don't have any calls. The chat room is packed, locked and stocked, and we don't have anybody that will pick up the calls. And we do have some what would be characterized as hate speech, since Minnesota has passed the gay rights, the first step of passing the gay marriage bill through the, I think, the House of Representatives here, or the state representatives.
Yes, and the Senate will vote on it day after tomorrow, on Monday.
Yes, and so there are some of those in the community that are in outrage. Now, I don't think they're in outrage against the gay community. I think they're in outrage that there's no black bills out there that we can pass and make a better situation. I'm not saying play the victim or be a special interest group, but just saying that, you know, we watched through the whole campaign of and we have another caller. Let's go ahead and take that.
Let's get the caller. All right.
Our caller, you are live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Gentlemen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
Good. You know, in relationship to, I think, what you were talking about earlier with the situations with the police officer, and I think we had three situations happening all simultaneously or in a matter of maybe a 2-hour, 3-hour window, mm-hmm. as the weather is actually taking a turn,
and school
is actually coming to a close, and you know, my thoughts, and I don't know about, maybe you guys can, you know, add on to that, but my thoughts with this whole situation and the unfortunate death that happened is that we will continue to see this kind of result in our community, especially when we have a feeder system in place with our public schools that are producing the end product, which is a young male that is very vulnerable to any kind of contact with the criminal justice system, guilty
Correct.
Or innocent.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely amazing, and I think that you guys have even talked about this, that CNN is actually in town to discuss, I assume, issues of public education and something that's happening here. It'll be interesting what their end result of the story is, but I'm seeing like a troubling thing happening here where, you know, a lot of our organizations that are here to articulate the community's concerns, and many of them have are well-funded to do so. You know, it's interesting how maybe if we track the money on their funding, I'm seeing a troubling pattern here of maybe that how this state, and more specifically the city of Minneapolis, is really trying to pay itself out of another narrative to tell nationally what's happening here locally. And it's an interesting place where we find ourselves in this community as a people, and we do have a national story. I just really don't know which side of that story is going to be told, but I think we're in a dangerous place, and hopefully those who understand the issues that of what is going on will raise their voices and continue to do the work that needs to be done to address it. But if not, unfortunately, I feel like we're going to have some really serious issues as we move into the warmer weather.
Well, let me just say to you, sir, that your observation and prediction, and we're not talking about doomsday predictors or et cetera. We're talking about factual information. I know that I'm appreciative as a historian, as a journalist, and as one who is out here, that what your observation is very consistent with as you indicated, a very troubling narrative. Let me just say this to you. We have about 5 minutes left. Your point and observation on the funding is absolutely correct. And let me give you an example. Once again, we are seeing conflict on our mall in downtown Minneapolis. In fact, there is a heavy police presence, and yet there has been significant funding given to any number of organizations. Now, last year, and we were able to stop it, the president of Macy's and the downtown chamber under Mark Stanglein and et cetera wanted the police to put, of all things, Mr. Allen, canines on the Nicollet Mall to deal with the Negro problem. What happened was at that particular point a decision was made at a high level that would not happen, but that has reengaged itself. And the current assistant chief for patrol, who is an African-American, Mr. Frizzell, is of the mindset that may be the thing to do, as he is under pressure from particularly the head executive CEO of Macy's has become obsessed with what he calls purifying and purging and cleaning up the area in and around Macy's. And so I'm just giving y'all a heads up, and, sir, I appreciate you giving the call and causing me to remember. They're getting ready, if they can get away with it, and they're cutting deals with our ministers and leadership, they're going to put canines on the Nicollet Mall, Mr. Allen.
Wow. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I ask a question to either one of you guys? How much would it cost to cut off your tongue?
How much to do what?
How much would it actually cost to have your tongue cut off? Meaning how much would it take for you to stop speaking to the issues of justice or equality or freedom?
It would be pretty hard to get to either myself or Mr. Albers.
Well,
they have no entree whatsoever with Blog Radio. Those are big white folks with big money. You know, they're not interested. In fact, I have to say, I think they love the program.
Yeah, but you know, there's a couple of folks here in town that done took, you know, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to get their tongue cut out.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right, right. Y'all take care of your business, man.
All right, take care. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Caller, you're live on the air. Are you just holding in the queue? Hello, caller? Must be in the queue. We'll just leave him like that.
Okay. All right. What do we got? We're down to
4 minutes left here.
Okay.
All
right. But if we get any call in down to the 3 minute mark, let's try to get them in. We've laid out some of the issues, if you will. Mr. Allen and myself stand ready, so ever ready. I appreciate the call that I discerned was from the West Coast. Appreciate this last caller who's raised some serious questions. We stand ready to be examined on any of the issues that we raise with respect to the tragedies of yesterday here in our beloved city, if you will, involving two African Americans and a young Latino and who have died, and a young woman who is in a perilous position, if you will, in critical conditions. And so we have no fear. To the question of the last caller with respect to biblical. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
We have a caller.
All right, let's get him.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, brothers. How are you? I'm sorry. My hands were full when you tried to cue me in last time. I just wanted to pose a question or look for some direction about, you mentioned the community policing that needs to happen, or that you have some historical information about that have been effective historically in holding people accountable who are, you know, employed and or, you know, calling themselves activists or organizers or whatever in our community, and that we oftentimes are expecting someone else to hold them accountable. And so if you could speak specifically about effective strategies on how to not only organize people but to ignite them to take action and be present so that you don't have the usual suspects that show up to every vigil and every, you know, community meeting or whatever it might be, who aren't, in fact, representative of or have the voice of the community at heart. So,
all right. Let me
more about that. And Mr. Edwards, before you,
Go right ahead.
Before you answer that, I just want to let you know that we're going to go ahead and continue on with this program and stream it right into iTunes. You can find the Ron and Don Show now on iTunes. And so there is no need to hurry because we will be cut off the air.
All right. Yes. Well, let me do this then, caller, out of respect to the maneuvering done by my co-host. Continue on with your reflections. No need to rush now. How much more time do we have, Mr. Allen?
Go ahead. Take your time.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, madam.
So yeah, like I said, I'm looking for specific examples or strategies or action steps that can be taken to help people who might be interested in engaging in that way and aren't familiar with the process and what successes have been had historically as it relates to this idea of community policing. Because in fact, we're the ones who live here in this war zone, and as you mentioned earlier, oftentimes the police don't show up until after the fact, or you know, as it relates to the tragedy yesterday, it's really disheartening to know that there weren't even police available, you know,
that's
to
right.
their family. And mm-hmm. and we're constantly saying, you know, we need more police, we need more police, when in fact, you know, they were just kind of standing around. I mean, of course, it's disheartening when you lose a colleague or, you know, someone is injured in your Blue Brotherhood. But I think it's unfortunate that's an all too true reality. You know, living in North Minneapolis, that you cannot rely on the police to police you.
Okay.
Oftentimes, you'll end up in a position where you're a victim of some type of violence against you before they're, in fact, there to protect you when you need them. And I can speak from personal experience about that. So, again, specific action steps, examples about how to get organized and get our own community policing happening. You know,
all right,
similar
stay
to, like,
tuned, and I'm going to lay some of that out to you.
We used to have, what was it, the Guardian Angels or something that used to police?
Oh, yeah. But even beyond that, there were specific policies. Let me say this to you. There are two specific plans for community policing that were advanced, and one is in the archives of the Department of Justice. That came from the PCRC, the Police Community Relations Group, that was in existence from 2004 to 2008. Unfortunately, politically, the current mayor of the city and the chief at that time did everything they could to suppress that. And unfortunately, when the term of the task force was up on December 30th, 2008, the mayor and the chief sent a letter indicating, over the protest of Clyde Belcourt and actually myself as the co-chairs, to continue the program for another 12 months. The second is actually the plan for community policing that was advanced, crafted, and put in place by the former Chief McManus. See, people tend to want to forget that William McManus was brought here as Chief of the Minneapolis Police Department from Washington, D.C. He had quite a plan, madam, for community policing and was beginning to move that plan, including the significant deployment of African-American officers, not only on the street, but in positions of command and authority and policy. He, unfortunately, and he's now the chief in San Antonio, Texas, and in fact, if anybody on the other side wants to contest us, I will make sure that we will do everything we can to have Chief McManus on this program in the next couple of Saturdays. Chief McManus laid out a heck of a plan. And he worked closely with all the communities of color, the Asians, the Latino Hispanics, and et cetera, the Somalis and the blacks. What he unfortunately found out is that there was really not a commitment within the city council. Many of the current people who are trying to run for mayor, many of the current people who are still trying to preserve their seats, there was not a commitment. And what happened, to the shock of all of us, the mayor announced at a meeting one afternoon at the third precinct that he did not have any intention in renominating William McManus as chief. And I got to tell you, we were kind of shocked, but I wasn't necessarily surprised because I began to see it coming. Now, they are, as I said before, there are two specific plans that were workable as it pertains to police community relations and community policing. One was from the PCRC, working with early on Chief McManus until he was forced out in 2005, and the other, Chief McManus' own plan. And what I would like to do is dust those off and make a commitment that we will discuss that next week on this program to take a look at community policing, the real community policing, and how the financing can be put in place, if you will. Now, let me say this. One of the things that is absent now, irrespective of an African-American as a deputy chief, is that there is no commitment on the part of this current administration in the police department, unfortunately, to really go in that direction. In fact, our current chief is also an adjunct professor. And in a class, Mr. Allen, and if our caller is still with us, the chief made the statement that racial affirmative action has been accomplished, and now we must look at other aspects of human rights.
Wow.
Yeah, she said that in a class. She, as I said, she's an adjunct professor. There were a number of officers or students of color in that class when she said that. And what she has done, if you will, since she came aboard a number of months ago, is that she has basically shown a lack of interest.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry. I need to hear you say that again.
You're talking in terms of her statement?
Yes.
Her statement in the classroom was that racial success and compliance has been completed, and we now must turn to other human rights issues as it pertains to the rights of people. What she was basically talking about was gays,
mm-hmm.
And any other group that declares themselves to be quote unquote victims of human rights violations, whatever that was supposed
mm-hmm.
to mean. It's to me, it's as an African American who's seen no progress really in quite some time, I think it's very dangerous for that tone to be set. As I said before to you, in her saying that, her actions as the new chief would support the fact. In fact, she, you know, there's some questions about her even reaching out to her own Native American officers in the department. Okay, I mean, we have a very small number, unfortunately, but they've had to work like hell to even get their numbers up to the current, I think it's 26 or 27 Native Americans. But what's happened is that she has bent over backwards to show that, you know, she's not going to show favoritism. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's just not good. It's not healthy. I was a little surprised. I've known Janae since she came on the department many years ago. She used to work the North Side. In fact, one of her early partners was a very well known, respected, highly respected African American officer. But she, I don't know. She's not the Janae that I know that I knew 20 years ago. Okay, she's changed up for whatever reason. But to your particular question, which is extremely important, in her change, if you will, in both her philosophy, her approach to policing, her treatment of her own personnel and troops, if you will, the hostility that's already began to emanate itself from within the police department, you know, we become the victims because the anger is directed towards us. You know, no one's going to really come in and act a fool in front of the chief. So the retaliation, if you will, is pointed towards those that are most vulnerable. And I didn't want to say anything, but, you know, that's the way fate is. You've drawn it out by asking the question about what can be done with respect to community policing. I refer you to the article in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder a couple of weeks ago where Janae was on the front page talking in terms of her expectations for policing, okay? Only problem is, I know that she at this point really does believe that, okay?
Mm.
She really doesn't feel that. She's not committed to that at this particular point in time. And part of it has to do with the recruitment policy that's now in place for the department or the lack of for additional persons of color and particularly African Americans. And so when you see what is called a pattern in practice, all right, then you begin to have the right to question the sincerity of what's being done. There'll be a new mayor coming in, and Janae will have another 2 years on that new mayor's watch. The new council will be coming in. As many as 7 new council members will be coming in, and I'm not sure that they have a real feel. But I have to tell you, and I reflected in a column in this week's Spokesman Recorder about an incident that happened a year ago at the Elks. I'm not sure, young lady, that we're even on the radar screen as being concerned about our concerns as it pertains to community policing. Now, there are all kinds of ways to approach that. Some of that has to be a discussion in private. Okay, and so we welcome you to call us after we go off the air, and we can talk specifics. You said something very interesting. You certainly can't have the same old guard who have been well paid, if you will, to make it appear that they have the best interests of the African-American community, and yet nothing is happening in our favor, if you will. So there are two plans. There are two plans that I think could have been very successful, could have improved the current relationships, atmosphere, environment, and et cetera. One was Chief McManus's plan that he came here with when he was brought here from Washington, D.C. He thought that this mayor and this city council was sincere. He found out they weren't. He said, let me get the hell out of here. And the other one was that came from the community itself through the Police Community Relations Council, PCRC. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Mr. Allen, any other calls? We're making a move.
We have one more call, but before I get that call in, we have been contacted by a very good local news reporter who says that I am over here on 26 in Blaisdell where people have put out fly balloons and flowers for the victims, but that's all this person has right now. And I would encourage anybody listening to this show in that area that knows anybody, go track down any media truck you see out there and give this young lady the right story. And our next caller. Caller, you are live on the air, our last call, and we have under 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, quick one. I'm going to first go say, as a participant or a member of the Washington, D.C. Police Department, Chief McManus was probably the best thing that could have ever stormed through Minneapolis, Minnesota in years. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. Whatever plan he drew up for community policing, and it has nothing to do with the Guardian Angels and other people, community policing is not the community going out there and acting as vigilantes. I'm going to just say the first thing. People get it confused. No, the community aren't the police. Any plan that Chief McManus put out there, the next mayoral candidate or whatever mayor candidate is still standing, if they don't make a commitment to dusting it off, taking a look at it, and implementing it, don't vote for them sorry asses.
Okay. All right.
That's the first thing I'm going to say, because I know community policing works there. Second, and what I call for is, how come you guys aren't getting black parents with kids in Minneapolis public school? How come you're not getting them on your show? How come they're not calling in? How come they're not talking about what's going on? Why is their child not doing well on tests? What's going on in the classroom? Do they not know? Do they not care? What is it about the parents in Minneapolis, or the students in Minneapolis public school?
Well, it's a mixture of all the above, but what has happened is that actually the students have been very competent and very aggressive. We just have, we have limited time. We've had people call in who clearly know what is going on. We've had students call in on issues pertaining. I mean, we've been doing this for over 2 years, but there's only so much time. The other thing is that unfortunately we're not the most cyber group of people on the totem pole, if you mean. Unfortunately, not enough of us spend the time. You know, we come on a Saturday at 3 o'clock, and in the summertime, people start finding all kinds of reasons to do all kinds of other things until they are personally affected by the effects of racism or the tragedy or et cetera. But we have a couple of people who have been strong advocates for them that have continued to call in and keep us enlightened, and we keep them enlightened. So there has been participation, but let me say in the final, because we're probably down to the last minute,
yes,
the Department of Schools have paid people to do just the opposite of what you said, and that is to recruit and to commit themselves to community engagement.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay.
And you feel free to give us a call next Saturday, and if you have any specific question, we'll go into specific responses on how the game has been worked here.
All right. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, she asked a hot question, didn't she, Mr. Allen?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Now we are out of time. We have enough time to say that you can listen to our podcast on iTunes by searching The Ron and Don Show, Black Politics in Minneapolis, or just The Ron and Don Show, or the link for the podcast will be posted on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.